Discovering stories of people living out their beliefs in our culture, communities, and the public square. And finding courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
At the tender age of 13, Riley Banks Snyder traveled to Kenya. There, she sat in a classroom full to the brim with first and second graders, all sharing one single pencil. The gifts that Riley had brought and was so excited to distribute to them suddenly paled in importance to the school supplies that were so easily accessible back home in Branson, Missouri. She realized these kids didn't need matchbox cars or jump rope. They needed pencils and paper. From that moment of discovery came a nonprofit effort called Generation Next, collecting school supplies for Kenyan schools. Now, this extraordinary effort is ministering to Kenyans in need through a school, community center, and programs offering healthy food and life skill education. Today, we take a closer look at a truly one-of-a-kind story on the road as we welcome the founder and executive director of Generation Next, Riley Banks Snyder, to the show. Riley's new book is called Riley Unlikely: With Simple Childlike Faith, Amazing Things Can Happen. And Riley, it is a privilege to verbally meet you today. How are things for you?
Good. Thank you so much for having me with you.
Absolutely. And as I read your biography, I was trying to remember what I was doing when I was 20. And what comes to my mind is, I think, trying to run across campus quickly enough to get to my class that started in 5 minutes after my alarm failed to wake me on time. You are, of course, aware that most 20-year-olds haven't started global ministries, yes?
Yes, I am.
Well, this is quite a remarkable story, and your book really is fascinating. But it begins when you ask your parents to let you travel to Kenya when you were 13. Why did you want to go?
Well, my aunt and uncle were going to be serving in Kenya for about 6 months, and they had told us, I remember, at Christmas time, and they had traveled to several different countries before doing mission work, and so I had always heard about the other places of the world through them. And so finally, when they were talking about going to Kenya, I really was interested in getting to go and visit them. And so I kept thinking about it, and I was also thinking about what my parents were going to say, and eventually I just got up enough courage to ask my parents, and they just kind of looked at one another and looked at me, and then my mom just kind of said really slowly, I don't really see why not. You know, it is a great opportunity, and we're going to have family there, and she goes, but, you know, you're going to have to make a lot of sacrifices to be able to have enough funds to be able to go. So that's kind of how it all just started.
We set the scene of you in that classroom, but if you could just take us inside what that first trip was like, whether it was similar to what you expected and how you came to find yourself in that situation in the classroom where you were discovering just how significant this need for school supplies really was.
Yeah, our second week, or our first week when we were in Kenya, my dad and I helped serve in the hospital. He would go on rounds with my uncle, and I would go to the neonatal unit with my aunt and see babies. And then our second week was the week at Mosop Orphanage, which also has a school. And so our job, my dad and I's job, was to go around the classroom and help the kids just spell out a small word, like ball or bear, that had been written up on the blackboard. And so the very first student I went to help had a really stubby pencil, and it was dull, and it had a hard time writing. And so I was looking for another pencil or pen, or even just a sharpener, but nobody had one in the classroom. And I was looking through my bag, and I didn't have one. So we just worked with what we had. And once we finished, I moved on with the next kid. And the kid I had just helped passed his pencil on to the kid I was getting ready to help. Mm-hmm. And every single kid around the table used this same little pencil. And I just kept thinking, they're finally getting to come to school. You know, their parents were able to get the funds to be able to send them to school, but they don't have the necessary equipment that they need to learn. And then with that, you know, I knew immediately whenever I got home that I wanted to go back to Kenya. And I told my mom, I was like, I had a ton of fun, but I really want to do something useful and good for these people. And she reminded me of the pencil story, and we started Generation Next, and it just really just kept growing from there.
Well, it's extraordinary. You returned to Kenya then a year later with 200 backpacks filled with donated school supplies. Could you take us back to why you had a heart to really meet that need specifically? I know there are so many needs, of course, but why was that educational need one that really stuck with you?
For me, it was, you know, whenever I went, I was 13, and so I remember, and I have to say I even still did it in high school, you know, just dragging my feet through the door to go to school. I didn't like it. I was like, oh, we have to get up early. You know, I just probably complained about everything there could be to complain about.
Yes.
And these kids are just so thankful and grateful to be sitting in that classroom every day, and that they get the opportunity to learn new things, and that they aren't having to sell fruit and vegetables, or they're not having to go get water every day. And I just think, you know, education is something every kid just deserves, and it's just not always an opportunity over there. And so at 13, I thought, you know, I can definitely do school supplies. I kept thinking about our junk drawer at home. That's what we call it. And it's just crammed with pens and pencils. And yeah. I was like, man, why didn't I think to bring those? So school supplies at the age of 13 was something that I thought I could do.
That's the voice of Riley Banks Snyder, author of Riley Unlikely. With simple, childlike faith, amazing things can happen. How did you first start matching your passion to the generosity of others? How were you able to transfer that fire that people can hear for this issue to help people, to others, when you came home to Missouri?
A lot of people, you know, I kind of kept up with our trip on Facebook. And then, you know, I was always talking about it. I was like, oh, this place is great. I loved it. These people are just incredible. And I think, as much as I talked about it to any and everybody, I think, because that's all I would talk about. In Riley Unlikely, I talk about how quiet I was before, but it's not like now I couldn't be quiet about Kenya. And so some people were like, okay, I think just my enthusiasm and drive and passion that I didn't have before going to Kenya is really what made a lot of people take notice. And, people started offering me opportunities to come and share about my trip. And, you know, the community here at Branson just really, really helped make my dream such a huge possibility. And not just the community, but my family as well. I mean, my parents are huge supporters, and they work so hard to help make Generation Next what it is. So.
Well, let's talk about Generation Next. How did you decide to start a nonprofit organization? This is not something that many 14-year-olds have on their resume.
Yeah, well, the nonprofit was really unexpected, which I say about most of my life since I went to Kenya. But the nonprofit, it was a lot of times when we would go to different areas, like Staples or Walmart or just like big name brand stores, they wanted a tax ID number. And we were such, you know, we had no idea what that was. And so we finally looked into a nonprofit and we were like, oh, well, that kind of fits what we are wanting to do. And so we had someone just offer to fill out all of the paperwork. And it was a lawyer here in town, and he volunteered his time to do that for us. And thanks to his help, we were able to, you know, really have Generation Next be a nonprofit. And kind of the meaning behind the name, we thought, was if we were able to help one generation grow up and be successful in Kenya, that maybe they would want to come back and better their own communities and keep, you know, making the same impact where they're from.
Understood. Taking some ownership.
Yeah.
And now, paint us the picture of a day in the life now for Generation Next. You do so many things, but what does an overview of that work look like today?
Today, normally it's working at the thrift store. We Riley's Treasures, which is here in Branson, Missouri, is a secondhand store. And all of the proceeds go to fund Generation Next. And really, we're just here most of the time sorting the supply, like the stuff that we get, the clothes. And then when we're not here, like yesterday, we were running around to different Walmarts in the area because we found dollar backpacks. And so we kind of had like an online fundraiser, and we were just running everywhere, just grabbing these backpacks. And so it's really sporadic at times. And sometimes it's, you know, a day filled with interviews or traveling for the weekend to go speak at different churches or different youth groups in the areas. So, it, you know, a lot of times we're here at the thrift store, but some days you just never know.
Riley Banks Snyder is with us. The book is called Riley Unlikely. With simple, childlike faith, amazing things can happen. Take us a little bit further along this road of your heart for education, if you could. You did speak about the impact of one generation, and then once that generation has been touched, how they can change another generation. But, of course, you have the school in Kenya that you have built. Talk a little bit about how that works and your vision for that going forward.
Yeah, so we have a student, and it's in Kibwezi, Kenya, and we have 40 kids there, and they all get to go to school for free. We don't make them pay a tuition because we pay for their meals every day, and we pay for their teachers and their uniform and their supplies, so they don't have to pay any fees to us. And even for the kids that don't come to our school, we still take out school supplies to different kids in the area. But most of our kids right now in our school are, they kind of range from 12 to 5 years old. We actually have a 12-year-old in our pre-K classroom, and we just met him this year, and he has actually had to stay at home and take care of his baby sister while his mom goes to work every day, and his dad's not there, and a lot of times they didn't think that he was able to learn because he was never really given the opportunity to speak, and so they made up something that said he had a heavy tongue. But, you know, anytime one of our translators got to speak with him, he spoke really well, and he interacted with the kids great, but he was never given this opportunity to get to learn. And so through our school and thanks to our donors, that school is there, and that kid gets to go to school every day now. And, it's huge for the kids in the area because it is such a small community, and otherwise they would have had to walk for miles to even get to a school, or most of them wouldn't even be in school now.
Wow. Understood. That is a tremendous need being filled. I know that the needs of orphans in Kenya speak to your heart very poignantly as well. Can you explain why that is and how you're working to serve them as well?
Yes. So, We are currently working on hopefully having an orphanage. We know that that takes a lot of work and a lot of paperwork and a lot of interaction with the government. And so we're hoping to have one of those one day at our community center, which has got about 7,000 square feet, and it has two wings, so we could have a boys' wing and a girls' wing. When I was a junior in high school, I was diagnosed with a disease called MRKH, which affects about 1 in 5,000 women. So it's not really considered rare, but it is very uncommon. And so what that means is that I was born without a uterus, and without that, I can't ever have children of my own. And I really struggled with it when I first found out, and I didn't understand God's purpose in it, and I was frustrated with Him. And but I had family and friends that came alongside me and said He has a purpose and plan in everything that He does. And one of my friends, we got to sit down, and she goes, "I don't really think He would have put you in Kenya when you were 13 years old, and then you find out that you have this disease where you can't have children." She's like, "He's already put you in a place where you can love and take care of more children than you're ever going to be able to have yourself." Mm. And so this community center, we're really hoping to be able to be an orphanage and just get to love on and take care of kids who don't have parents.
We are on the road today with Riley Banks Snyder. Her book is called Riley Unlikely: With Simple Childlike Faith, Amazing Things Can Happen. And you can hear amazing things have happened, are happening, and continue to happen with her ministry in Kenya. You write that, quote, there's having faith and then there's crazy, end quote. How did you see God make some things possible that originally did seem crazy?
Really, I always kind of thought it was all crazy. but one story in particular that really helps people understand that is that we had shipped a container of supplies over 1 year. And it cost a lot of money to do that. And it was supposed to get there about 2 weeks before we ever got to Kenya. And it never showed up. And so we're 2 weeks in, and we know it's in port, but it's never made it to Kibwezi. And so we are waiting, and we're trying, interacting with the shipping company and emailing, and we keep getting we need this amount of money to, spray it, or we need this amount of money. And eventually we got an email one day that said, we need $5,000 more. And we were just we are definitely out of money. That is just not going to work. And it was devastating. I mean, we've already spent this amount of money. We've put this much work into it. And you go, God, how is this part of the plan? We've made it this far. It's in the country. And so, you just keep continually praying about it. And my mom, she shot off an email to a Kenyan that we knew that has been shipping a lot of things shipping to Kenya. And so she emailed him and was explaining it. And he sent us back an email later that evening and said, hey, I found it, and it'll be to you at 9:00 in the morning. And we were like, okay, sure. You sure, you just don't believe it right then and there. But, the next morning at 9:00, it was on time, which is huge over there. And everything was in there, and it was just incredible. And, it was just crazy at the time. You're like, this isn't going to work. What was the whole plan in this? And, just continually relying on God's timing and just putting an immense amount of faith in what he's doing.
Yeah.
And I think at times that, the craziness is what really shows how much faith we have in him.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I love the way you put that. Well, I think that a fascinating part of this story is what you mentioned, of course, working there at the thrift store. There is this connection that's been established between the people of your adopted home in so many ways in Kenya, in your original hometown of Branson, Missouri, from where you join us today. Tell us a little bit more about the thrift store and food pantry in Branson and the relationship and the role that it plays with the ministry in Africa.
Yeah, so the thrift store here in town, we actually got from our local Boys and Girls Club. They just decided that they were ready to be done with their thrift store and just, we're like, here you go. It's a turnkey. You can have everything inside as long as you're willing to take care of it. And so we did, and it's so nice to not have to worry so much financially, that this thrift store helps so much with fundraising and making sure we can make our monthly payments for our school and our center. And then we also, we have a food pantry here at the store, and it's just a no questions asked. When someone comes in and they go, hey, we're really needing some food, we just go, okay, here, let me go pull some out. So we just a resource that we have that is super helpful for our community, especially during the winter. And we even have people who will come in that are having job interviews and they need black pants or certain shoes or a certain shirt, and they might not have the money at the time. And so if people are willing to come in and just ask, hey, this is where I'm at, we're more than willing to give it to you. If you ever walk in, you'd be like, oh my goodness, yeah, she can totally give you whatever you want. It's so full in there. But, it's so nice to get to work here every day and get to interact with the people that come in.
In the book, I thought one of the most fascinating things that you did was to sort of examine yourself pre-Kenya and post-Kenya. How are those people different people?
In a lot of ways, they're very different, but in a lot of ways, they are still the same. I kind of explained myself before Kenya as really shy and quiet, and I think I had one, and I still have one really awesome best friend, but I don't know, and I like to eat lunch in my teacher's classrooms, and I was very introverted.
Yeah.
And going to Kenya just helped me discover who I was and what I was passionate about, and that the Lord had such incredible plans for my life. I never even remotely thought that He could take someone like me and put me in Kenya. And I think a lot of people in my community thought that too. And so, you know, finally getting to figure out what His plan was or what His purpose with me was is what's really just totally transformed who I am. I'm so much more driven, and you know, my faith has really been tested, and I have a much stronger love for the Lord than I ever did before Kenya. And I'm so incredibly thankful to have gotten to go when I was 13. And I know that that's not an opportunity that a lot of young people get. But I just continue to thank the Lord that He allowed that trip to happen for me when I was at such a young age.
That's the voice of Riley Banks Snyder, author of Riley Unlikely: With Simple Childlike Faith, Amazing Things Can Happen, here on the road for Faith Radio. I'm just curious. I mean, I think so many of us are longing for that place of purpose, and we find it at different points in life. You clearly have found that place of purpose, and just hearing about how it's released you in so many different ways to live free, really. What do you say to somebody who maybe comes up to you and says, how can I take the first steps towards finding that purpose, whether it's helping others, whether it's finding the role we're supposed to play vocationally? How can we, do you think, start to find what you yourself have found in this way?
I think the first step is willing to make a lot of sacrifices, whether that's financially or with your stuff, or with your comfort zone, even. A lot of the time, I don't think that the Lord is able to test our faith in Him unless we're out of our comfort zones. Mm. And I think a lot of times we are so comfortable where we're at. We're like, oh no, I don't want to step outside the line. Like, this is good. I like this. but I think, you know, really just relying and trusting the Lord's timing and having so much faith in Him. I mean, it's hard at times. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm very controlling. I like things a certain way. I like to do them. And so just opening up my hand sometimes and giving it to the Lord is really hard for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's hard for a lot of people, but just, you know, continually relying on Him and leaning on Him to lead you where He wants you, and have childlike faith.
Well, Riley, I think that a lot of people who've heard the stories you've shared and really your journey here to helping so many in Kenya, probably wondering if there's anything they can do to help you. And so really the question is there, can we go somewhere, whether it's a website or somewhere else, and learn about how we can come alongside and partner with what you guys are doing?
Absolutely. We have a website, and it's generationnextcares.org. So that has our emails. We have phone numbers on there, so you can get a hold of us through that, or you can check out our projects and check out a lot on the website. But you can also find us on Facebook at Generation Next. And we post on there all the time. We're normally posting at least a few times a day just about what we're doing or what's going on with our organization. So those are really great ways to get involved and figure out more about what we're doing.
And of course, as well, the book once again is called Riley Unlikely: With Simple Childlike Faith, Amazing Things Can Happen. And where can we go to find the book, Riley, if people are interested in checking it out and picking up a copy?
You can find it on Amazon. I know it's on Walmart and Target online. You can go to Barnes & Noble if you have a Books A Million or Lifeway or Christian Books. So it's available in a lot of different areas.
Tremendous. Well, it's been a real privilege having you here today. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your story. And I think a lot of us are going to be inspired, no matter what our age is, to hear someone with your youth and your zeal for what you're doing has been a real, real pleasure. So thank you so much and keep up the great work.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.